Good evening and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. I'm your host, Michael Gray, and in today's show we'll be talking about conscious, compassionate awareness and responding to your email questions. Today's show is a pre-recorded show, so please don't call us today. You can call us again when we're back on the air live. Good evening, and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good evening, Sherry.
Good evening, Michael.
How are you today?
Just dandy, and yourself?
I'm good. I'm feeling kind of wired. You know those moments when it just feels like I'm just alive and bouncing off the walls and...
Kind of plugged in. Plugged into 240.
240. 240.
All right.
Yeah, great. So today's show is a pre-recorded show.
Yeah.
Which I'm excited about.
Get through those email questions that kind of back up.
We have a big stack of email questions here.
Mm-hmm. So it's a good thing I go out of the country periodically and go into that out of telephone range so that we get to get caught up.
Yes, yes, that's great. Shall we jump right in?
Yeah.
You're Sherry. I've been married for 25 years. I have four daughters, and my husband uses pot and alcohol every day, usually starting at noon. So when he arrives at home, he is tired and not available, but nice as could be. I wonder if guys are just not that connected. I have had a problem with this for a very long time. He has told me to stop trying to control him. After some long years in and out of counseling, I ended up having an affair. He found out, and life got even more dysfunctional. I have been going to Alcoholics Anonymous for 4 years and have learned that I am responsible for my own happiness. I am still very lonely and feel the effects of his addiction. I justify my own actions, for example, seeking love outside the marriage, and then end up feeling bad about myself. I grew up in an alcoholic family. I am filled with fear about leaving. I am getting old, have wrinkles, no career. My husband is one of the good guys, would not cheat, is generous, kind, easygoing, boring, stoned. He watches a lot of TV. I have a daytime life I love. I can exercise, work a couple of hours, and have great friends. I have freedom. I am afraid to give it up. But I continue to feel upset about the lack of connection. What are your thoughts on this? From a listener.
Well, I do have some thoughts on this. You know, the thing that we are so conditioned against doing is going directly at the problem. So we got that whole picture, and, you know, it's a really interesting life.
Yes.
And at the very end, read me the last two sentences, would you?
I have freedom, let's see.
Yeah, that's a good place to start.
Okay. I have freedom, I am afraid to give it up, but I continue to feel upset about the lack of connection.
Okay, but I continue to feel upset about the lack of connection. Now, there is, whatever opinions you might have about people's use of substances, okay, let's forget that because it doesn't take substances to cause a person not to want to connect by somebody else's definition.
Yes.
Okay, and so here is this kind of glowing picture of this person's life. You know, this is married to a wonderful guy who wouldn't cheat, who's always there, he's really nice, he sounds like he's really low maintenance. She does whatever she wants to do. She exercises. She has great friends. She goes wherever. So all of that, you know, it took however long to read through the list of wonderful things going on in this life, all of that doesn't count because I'm not having the connection that I want.
Yeah.
So how about getting to the bottom of that?
Uh-huh.
What if there's nothing going on other than the persistent voice of discontent. Uh-huh. Always going to find something wrong and not enough. And as long as it can point at something that we're going to agree is true, well, you know, he shouldn't be stoned all the time. You know, it's really true. How could he? Okay. So, you know, if I want to be connected to somebody, then it's important. If I want to be connected to somebody, then I need to figure out how to connect to that somebody. Yes. Not to sit there and say, and I want to be connected to that person, and so this is how they need to be connected to me.
Yes.
It can feel subtle, but it's not.
Uh-huh.
I want to feel loved, and that person needs to love me in such a way, by my definition of love, so that I feel loved. No. If I want to feel loved, then I need to figure out how to feel loved.
Uh-huh.
Because that's the only thing that's going to cause me to feel loved. So when I know how to be connected, I will feel connected.
Uh-huh.
I won't decide that because I am unavailable to him when he is like that he is necessarily unavailable to me.
Uh-huh.
So I'm projecting my distance onto him and then blaming him for my life experience.
Yeah.
So it's you know, if we can look at it with that little specific, or we can look at it on a universal basis, people will get to this place of saying, you know, whatever this big story is, you know, and I'm just not happy that, whatever the big story is, you know, and I'm just not satisfied with whatever the big story is. Okay, and then they slide in the little line just at the bottom that tells you what the real issue is that they need to be working on.
Uh-huh.
And it never has anything to do with the story.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
So if I want to be satisfied, I need to figure out how to be satisfied.
Uh-huh.
If I want to feel connected, I need to figure out how to feel connected. If I want love, I've got to figure out how to experience love. Not wait around for somebody out there or some circumstances to change so that I'll have what I want, because that's never going to happen.
Wow. Wow.
It's a trick. It's a giant, giant trick. And because we get so caught up in the story, we miss the trick. It's just, you know, I always compare this to going to a performance by a magician. And that's exactly what it's like. We get so caught up in the story that we miss how the trick is done.
Uh-huh. So it sounds like the trick that you're pointing at is learning to take responsibility for our own lives.
Yeah, I want to feel connected.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, how do I feel disconnected? How do I do disconnected? Because, you know, you can't be disconnected. It's not possible to be disconnected.
Yes.
So how is that illusion being created and maintained?
Yes.
Yeah, we are one. So how do I manage to feel separate? And that's the, you know, that's the spiritual bottom line. How do I manage to feel separate? And that's what the story always is. I feel separate, and here's why.
Uh-huh.
That's, you know, whatever content gets plugged in or however the story is laid out, that's what it comes down to.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. That's definitely my experience as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and everybody agrees. You know, we're all in this together. So we say, oh, yeah, boy. Well, who can blame you? Really? Oh, she does. Oh, well, I'm sorry. And we just all support you in getting out of there because, well, I mean, how could you possibly be happy with her when she acts that way, when she is that way, when she doesn't do that, when she holds her mouth that way? How could a person possibly be happy? Well, if a person wants to be happy, they're going to be happy. There's no stopping them. My teacher used to say about students, and this is when I was primarily in a role of student, so I thought that there was a message in there for me. He would say, the sincere student cannot be stopped. There's nothing that a teacher can do to interfere or hold back a sincere student.
Yes.
An insincere student cannot be helped. There's nothing a teacher can do to assist an insincere student.
Yes.
So, same thing. There's, you know, if I want to be happy in my relationship, if I want to be happy in my life, then I will be.
Yes.
If I don't really want to and I want an excuse not to be happy, not to be satisfied, I can always look at my partner and say, well, you know, there's the cause.
Yes.
And then I can get my pals to rally around and agree. And of course, then if I'm in that situation where this is miserable, but I can't leave, well, that'll keep a person in suffering for a lifetime.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Thank you, Sherry.
Oh, yeah. It's just, you know, that particular content can sound very individual, but, boy, the process of it is something we all struggle with.
Yes, yes, definitely. Okay, ready for the next question?
Mm-hmm.
Dear Sherry, first I want you to know how grateful I am for this radio program. I rarely hear it live because of work, but listening afterwards is wonderful. Thank you to you and Michael.
This is where we should put in a little plug for... if people are really enjoying this show, they could send in a donation.
Yes.
Because it's an expensive habit we've got going on here.
It is an expensive habit.
Yeah, we threaten sometimes to do the spring pledge break or the fall pledge break, where we you know, take a show and just beat people over the head with the importance of sending in money. But
yes.
Then we never really allow ourselves to do it, but we could mention it.
Yes, and how would they go about donating?
How would they know? How would anybody know that that's a possibility if we don't tell them? And we never tell them.
Yes.
So now we are.
Yes.
This is good. All right.
So they can go to the website, livingcompassion.org, and click on donate.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Pretty simple.
Mm-hmm.
My question is this. At times, when talking to someone else, I project that I am having a conversation with that person's conditioning. Usually, I am into the conversation a bit before this awareness comes through to me, or perhaps this awareness comes after the conversation. An example would be when someone rants and raves about the news or politics and wants to, quote, spew it out, unquote, onto anyone who will listen. Or often it's just someone going on and on about their opinion of something. I've learned to extricate myself from those political conversations fairly easily, because I don't want to go down that road with them. At other times, however, it seems more difficult for me to pick up on what is going on, and at the end of the conversation, there's a sense of having been beat up on a subtle level. I think reflective listening might be able to help me out here, but recently, when I tried it, the other person just interrupted and started repeating their whole angry story again. At the end of the conversation, I still felt like I had participated in a conversation that was not good for either one of us. In the moment, from a centered place, there is nothing to defend on my part, and it looks like continuing the conversation will just lead to suffering for us both. Could you talk about this?
Oh, could I talk about this? My. You know, the person came up with the magic word there, from center.
From center,
there's just not a problem. So practicing reflective listening, of course, when we're reflecting, what we're doing is being a mirror for the other person. And so it's about coming to center and staying at center and simply reflecting back what the person is saying. And we're not reflecting them so that we can fix them or change them, but just so that they have the best chance they have of feeling heard and hearing themselves. And so from center, it doesn't matter what the conversation is about. You know, it's only conditioning that divides the world up into this is a good conversation and this is a bad conversation, or this is a conversation that's helpful and this is one that's not helpful. People are operating out of their conditioning almost all the time. So if we only talked to people when they were at center, it would be very, very quiet. And it's not just that they would be very, very quiet. you know, I can look at somebody and say, oh, well, now they're just operating out of their conditioning. But if I weren't in conditioning, that wouldn't be my response to them.
Uh-huh.
So I need to bring it back to whose mouth this is coming out of and whose head is it appearing in, So that's who's projecting it, and that would then in that case be me. And so if I want to have a different life experience, then the secret is not to get away from everybody who's not centered. That's like the thing that we talk about in parenting, where the kids are completely out of control. Now, that has to be in quotes, okay? The kids are completely out of control, and then the parent sends the kids into timeout and feels immediately better.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so it must be the kids,
uh-huh.
Because look how much better I feel now that they're gone.
Yes.
But, of course, if I weren't holding on to a bunch of beliefs about how things need to be and how kids should act and what I need in this moment and a lot of dualistic thinking, then it wouldn't actually matter what the kids are doing. Okay? Now, I'm not saying kids should just, run roughshod over everybody all the time, and that it's the parents just need to say, well, if I were centered, But the point is that, of course, when we get away from the things that are irritating our conditioning, we feel better. But that's not the same thing as being free.
Yes.
So practice is practicing staying centered, coming to center, and staying with the breath at center in all circumstances. So there's somebody, just ranting and raving and spewing and carrying on at a great rate. Well, it's my best opportunity to say, aha, this is a workshop. So now, can I practice being here and present, centered, under these circumstances? There's nothing to say a person has to or should, but it is a wonderful spiritual opportunity.
Yes, while they're there in the moment anyway.
Yeah.
Might as well practice.
Yeah, rather than being one more opportunity for someone to feel not accepted for who and how they are.
Uh-huh.
Because that's what we're saying. You're really, you're messing with me spiritually. And so I just need to make a decision that you're not somebody I want to be around and get away from you so that I can go back to being spiritual. And it's fine. It's just that it doesn't work.
Yeah.
Because the problem is not with the other person. If the problem were with the other person, it would work. But it doesn't, because the problem is with me. I'm the one who's having trouble with this. Even the person who's ranting and raving, it sounds like they're having a better time than the writer. Because they're doing what it sounds like. They're doing what they want to be doing. They're ranting and raving and spewing.
Yeah.
And it's the writer who's there agonizing over this and suffering and struggling over it.
Yes.
Yeah. So to say, okay, this is clearly a place where I am giving up my happiness.
Uh-huh.
So I'm going to work on this, and I'm going to seek out these people and practice my reflective listening on them.
Yes.
And keep my sense of humor and stay at center.
Yes.
And realize that if they weren't exactly like me, I wouldn't be having such a difficulty with them.
Yes.
So it's an opportunity to extend compassion to both of us and enjoy it.
Great. Yeah, that's a different perspective on it.
Yeah. The world of opposites. Conditioning almost always tells us what's exactly the opposite of what we need to be doing.
Yes. Yes. Okay, ready for the next question?
I am.
Hi, Sherry. I was at your workshop at Kripalu a couple of weeks ago.
Oh, these are old.
These are old. And that was great, so thank you. I particularly liked what you said about how spiritual growth does not start until the beatings stop.
Hmm.
Remembering this, I have been able to stop the beatings for the last couple of weeks. However, today the voices began again to torture me. I'm not working in a conventional sense right now, but rather, I am working on putting together a proposal for a documentary that I think will have an important social benefit. I will soon be meeting up with a bunch of people from my old workplace and am feeling concerned about their questions about what I am doing with my time right now. While I think the documentary is important, and I do have a documentary producer interested in seeing my ideas, my conditioned mind is saying, quote, "This will never get produced. You are wasting your time. Normal people would go out and find another job right away," unquote.
Normal people?
Normal people.
Yeah. Well, that's something to avoid, huh?
Yeah. On top of this, the man that I was seeing left me a couple of weeks ago because he thinks I'm too intense and told me that I have a restless soul. All of this led me to feel really depressed today with the voices telling me what a loser I am. Your wisdom would be very helpful right now. Thank you.
Well, now this person, I hope, was listening to the last situation, right? So,
yes.
She, I'm guessing, I don't know. I don't know if there's an indication of gender, but I'm going to say she.
Okay.
So she is seeing this man who says, you're really intense and you have a restless soul. What the heck does that even mean? You know, I mean, it's one of those things that you hear it or you read it and go, oh, wow, that must mean something, and then you stop and think about it and realize that doesn't mean anything.
Yes.
But aside from that, it's definitely, you can tell it's not a good thing. He didn't mean it as a compliment. Now,
yes.
That's a projection.
Yes.
Right? So she's doing something that really gets to his conditioning. And rather than take responsibility for it and say, I'm having this reaction to this person, I want to take responsibility for that because it's my reaction, I'll just say something mean to her as I walk out the door,
yes.
And then both of us will be convinced that the problem was her, not me.
Yes.
I just, for the record, I think that that's really creepy and unfair.
Yes.
So, then, aside from that, so the voices of conditioning are saying essentially the same thing as this man, only they have different language, right? So it's interesting how we'll bring people into our lives who will reinforce the voices of conditioning for us.
Uh-huh.
Right? So the voices are giving essentially the same message that he was. There's something wrong with you. And then they project out, and other people, well, see, he thinks there's something wrong with you. And not only that, all of these people that you used to work with and these people that you're going to be talking to, you know, they're going to think there's something wrong with you, too. It's all projection.
Yeah.
There really is something wrong with what conditioning is doing. It's nasty and underhanded, and it projects.
Yes.
So, you know, there's just no mystery in this. And it sounds like she had a period of time where she wasn't really allowing her life to be dictated by the voices of self-hatred.
Yeah.
And then there's a backlash, and they come out more vicious than ever to try to regain control. And it sounds like it kind of worked for a while. Of course, we don't know. It's been so long since this person wrote in, we have no idea where she is now.
Yes.
Maybe after this she'll call and tell us. But hopefully what happened is that, you know, she brought conscious compassion and awareness to it and reminded herself that, yes, those voices of conditioning are always there trying to ruin everything. And, in fact, they don't know what other people are going to say. And, yes, there's a lot of conditioning that says don't do what you want to do. Do what you should do. Don't do something that you find exciting and makes you want to hop up in the morning. Go get a job that you hate and be miserable. So I just hope that she's able to hang on and, you know, keep coming back to herself and recognize those voices for what they are and make life choices from her heart.
Yes, yes.
And I hope by now she's met somebody who doesn't need to say mean things to other people in order to make himself feel better.
Thank you for that, Sherry.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like we're getting a theme here with these questions.
Yeah.
In the sense of taking responsibility for what's going on with ourselves.
Yeah, and taking care of ourselves.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so the danger of letting conditioning talk us into projecting it out onto other people.
Yes.
Or letting conditioning talk us into taking on what other people's conditioning is projecting onto us.
Yes. Yes.
That's sidestepping conditioning. It's a full-time job. I just had this picture of a matador. You know, you put on your little tight black pants and ballet shoes and go out there with your cape and boom, 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 you know, trying to sidestep that giant charging bull of conditioning. And bull is apt.
Yeah. It's a full-time job.
Yeah, it is. It really is. It'd make a great cartoon, you know, all the places that that bull is hiding and waiting to race at you, and how deft you have to be in order to grab that cape out and your way past it.
Wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Sherry, we're going to take a quick break here, and we'll be back in a couple minutes.
All right.
Coming up next on Open Air, in our second half of today's show, we'll be continuing our conversation on conscious, compassionate awareness and responding to your email questions. And as a reminder, today's show is pre-recorded, so please don't call us today. You can call us when we're on the air again live. Welcome back. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber on World Talk Radio. Ready for the next question, Sherry?
I am.
Okay. The practice requires at least some level of understanding of basic concepts and a discerning mind which decides to listen to or not listen to the voices of conditioning. In some way, this implies a rather sophisticated mental process. Most people...
Well, I just want to say right here at the outset of this, this is a lot of assumption.
Uh-huh.
This is a lot of going through a process that is not, as far as I'm concerned, a requirement. But go ahead.
Okay. Most people that I discuss the practice with have no idea what I'm talking about.
That's because the person is discussing the practice. If I were discussing the practice, people would have no idea what I was talking about either. We don't discuss the practice. The practice is not an intellectual concept. So I think we ought to take this sentence at a time, all right?
Okay.
So let's take it from the top.
Okay. The practice requires at least some level of understanding of basic concepts and a discerning mind which decides to listen to or not listen to the voices of conditioning.
Actually, it doesn't. It doesn't. What happens with people... You know, it's been described, Zen practice has been described as the equivalent of walking for a long time in a light mist.
Uh-huh.
So there you are in your heavy overcoat, and you're walking through the mist, and slowly, slowly the overcoat is penetrated by the moisture. So it doesn't require any understanding at all. In fact, nobody can understand it. And
uh-huh.
What happens with people is... We keep coming back, and we keep being here. We're present. And for the split second that we're here, we get what's going on. And then we go up into our conditioned mind to try to make sense out of it, and we can't figure it out, and we get confused. And if you're, you know, around people doing our practice, you see it all the time. You know, the person, you know, their forehead is all screwed up, and their mouth is all, you know, I don't get it. It's just this agonizing period of time that most people have to go through, having nothing to do with what's required, but just having to do with their belief that their conditioned mind is going to understand this. So actually, practice is about dropping everything and coming back here. And all we're doing is learning to do that, and we're seeing through everything that keeps us from doing that. It is not a discerning or discriminating mind that causes us to either go with conditioning or to stay present. It's conscious, compassionate awareness.
Great. In some way, this implies a rather sophisticated mental process.
Well, I hope we've dispelled that notion.
Okay.
It is. It's an incredibly... beautiful process, but it has nothing to do with sophistication, and it's actually not mental.
Uh-huh.
When we see what we see, if somebody wants to have an experience of this, they're going along, and all of a sudden they get something. You know, we did it with the multiplication tables, or how the ABCs made words, or, you know, all through our lives we've had those times where somebody was trying to teach us something, and then all of a sudden we got it. Suddenly you see it. It just kind of drops in. And,
yes.
Oh, that's what we're talking about. Not figuring something out, not, okay, well, if this, then that, then, okay. No, we're not talking about that. That's what we're going beyond. That's what we're leaving behind.
Wow. That's great. Most people that I discuss the practice with have no idea what I'm talking about.
We already laid that to rest, I hope.
Okay.
You know, the secret to that is don't talk to people, because the writer doesn't know what he or she is talking about. So how would anybody else know what he or she is talking about?
Yes.
It doesn't work. If we're talking about communism, or you're talking about the relative merits of this economic approach or that economic, then, you know, pull out facts and figures and statistics and compare them, and but it has nothing to do with awareness. It's just a way to stay in conditioned mind and stay safely ignorant.
Is a certain level of intelligence a prerequisite for mindfulness?
Yes. It's certainly so, and it's the level of intelligence that all sentient beings have. Yeah. So it's, I don't know if this is true, but somebody once told me that a person who is not severely mentally challenged, but mildly mentally challenged, that those people are the best drivers.
Uh-huh.
Because you teach them to drive,
yeah,
and then all they do is drive. The really scary people are the ones who are multitasking. So they're driving and they're writing a speech and they're talking on the cell phone and changing CDs. They're the ones who are dangerous because they're not where they are.
Yes.
They're able to live in all these parallel universes. Now that doesn't have anything to do with the kind of intelligence that I'm talking about.
Yes.
Intelligence that animates us.
Yes.
We all have plenty of that for what needs to happen.
Yes. I think not, and think it should be available to all, but would like to hear your comment on this.
Well, you know what? The good news is that what we think doesn't have diddly squat to do with anything. You know, I think it should be available to everyone. Well, you know what? Nobody called me when they were putting the universe together. So, I didn't get to have input. So it is the way it is, and that is the way it is. And, it's just intellectual. It's just intellectualizing, and it doesn't have anything to do with awareness practice, isn't going to get anywhere in awareness practice, and it's going to have to be checked at the door if the person ever hopes actually to do awareness practice.
Yes.
Yeah. Because that's the, the person says, okay, now just take a breath and slip into that space between. Well, now, why would we want to, what do you mean by a space between the thoughts? I don't understand how. You know, I've sat in 10,000 rooms like that and had a million of those conversations. And what I've learned over time is they are there to stop a person, not help a person.
Yes. 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 And that was from a listener in Tennessee.
Right.
Okay. The next email.
I hope that person takes up meditation.
I hope so, too. I hope everybody does.
It would be lovely, wouldn't it?
It would.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, Sherry and Michael. This email is after hearing your show on December 5th. I am so thankful for what you are doing to make all of us aware of what exists. For example, should setters hate creators all within us? My writing to you is pushing the edge of my willingness. My challenge is speaking English well enough to call you. So by writing, I hope to make you understand what I want to say rather than not being able to speak good English.
Wow. Well, I'll tell you, you'd never get any difficulty out of this, would you?
No.
Yeah.
No. I first came across you and your Zen concept by listening to your Unconditional Self-Acceptance CD course. Then listening to callers' questions on conscious compassionate awareness brought clarity to some of my questions. While I am writing this, my self-hate is telling me, quote, you are not going to get a reply. No one is going to read this. Even if they read it, it is not that important to read and answer your question.
Wow. You know, yeah. I mean, self-hate doesn't even begin to cover it, does it?
No.
What an awful, mean, vicious, and to think that people spend a minute in relationship with something that is that nasty.
Yes.
Very sad.
Yes. Yes. Self-hate continues with, you should write simply and not go on and on and on, unquote. This must be because it is really upset I am writing to you.
Yes, and you notice it likes to go on and on and on.
It will be an interesting workshop on reflective listening to hear this story when I decide to call you. I am believing that I still have a lot of time on Earth, at least 30 more years according to the average lifespan, and then many other lives my soul will have to take to get it. What is life? What is its purpose? But listening to you made me shocked. I am now hopeful that even if life seemed to be bad, if I get it, I need not be suffering. So for a beginner, can you tell me how to practice while doing daily activities to be in the present moment, understand at that moment that this is the only time with this people? Thanks for your time, from a listener in India.
Hmm. Wow. I wish I could speak any language as well as well as that. I really hope that
individual
does call us. That's very inspiring.
Yes, it is.
You know, the simple way about that truly is kindness. To practice coming back here into this moment as often as possible during the day, every time it occurs to us, and just coming to a place of kindness. Kindness that's extended to this person, the person having the life experience, a sense of the goodness, the beauty in what's around, appreciation for that, and appreciation for life, and that's it. As we do that, as we practice that, our interest in, our willingness to be here deepens. We want to be, everybody would like to live their life in kindness, being accepted, being appreciated, being understood. I don't know of anybody who wouldn't like that, as much as they might initially try to push it away because they don't trust it and don't believe it and don't think it's available to them. So as we keep coming back, reminding ourselves of things like, this is it. You know, this is the moment. Here I am. I'm here. I'm alive. We'll be encouraged to do that more often, and it will become the, it's just the place that we prefer to live.
Yes. In a place of kindness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and even if we come back and what we run into is a lack of kindness, you know, that we run smack into self-hatred, well, can we have sympathy and understanding for the person who's experiencing that self-hatred?
Yes.
The person who's trying hard, the person who wants to wake up, the person who is sincere. Can we have sympathy and understanding for that person? If we can, there we are.
That's where we want to be.
Sounds like what you're pointing at is drawing that larger circle of acceptance.
Yes. Yes, for whatever is there.
Mm-hmm.
Say, well, I don't feel so good. Okay, well, let's draw a circle of acceptance around that person, because that's a hard place to be. You know, well, I'm really in a crummy mood. All right, well, let's embrace that person, because it's hard to be in a bad mood and have to go about your life and go to work and face people. And okay, so, you know, I'm really afraid. All right, well, let's give that person some support and understanding and maybe a little pep talk. And so whatever is there, not, okay, I can have acceptance for myself as long as I'm meeting the standards. If I'm being the person I should be, then, okay, I get treated sort of nice. But if not, there's no understanding or kindness for that person. And what we're doing is saying, no, we're learning, we're practicing understanding and kindness for that person no matter what. And, you know, the obvious next step of that is if we practice that with ourselves, so I'm going along and I am being embraced in kindness all day long, no matter what I'm doing, what my thoughts are, how I'm feeling, it doesn't matter. There's just a kind presence there with me as I go about through life. I'm going to be kinder to other people.
Yes.
It just follows.
Yes.
And, of course, conditioning would like us to believe that the opposite is true. I'm just selfish and self-indulgent. I'm just focused on myself, being nice to myself no matter what I'm doing. Well, okay. But it also makes me a kinder, more generous person.
Yes.
So that's a good thing.
Yes. Yeah, I had a nice warm feeling when you talked about going through your day, sort of, I project, enveloped in kindness.
Yeah. Yeah, having somebody there who really appreciates you and likes you and is on your side and wants good things for you, it's a very short trip to wanting that for everybody on the planet.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And especially for the people who get identified as the people who deserve it least. You know, especially those people, especially the bad people. They need kindness even more, perhaps, than the good people.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because so many people are withholding it from them.
Yes. Yes, definitely. Great. Thank you, Sherry.
Mm-hmm.
We have about 5 minutes left here.
Great.
And I have another email.
All right.
Hello, Sherry and Michael. Thank you for reading this email. I have been listening to your show for several weeks now, and I am grateful I'm at a spot in my life where the information I get from these shows is about the most liberating experience I have felt in my entire life.
Oh, gosh, that's great.
Whew, hallelujah.
Yeah.
Here is, quote, the rub, unquote. I often find myself confused around the idea of, quote, our perceptions making an experience what it is, unquote. When I feel that someone is being verbally or emotionally abusive, I often find myself getting confused with thoughts such as, well, this is your, quote, perception, unquote, and not this person's intention. At that point, I will...
Well, wait, we have to stop right there.
Okay.
This is your perception. That doesn't mean it's not that person's intention.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Yeah?
Yes.
So that's critical. So, you know, if I wake up in the morning and self-hate is being particularly vicious with me and I'm feeling threatened and pushed into a corner and I perceive you as the cause of all of my suffering and misery, I may, in fact, go after you in a truly hateful, vicious way. We could go back earlier in the show to me leaving somebody and saying, I'm leaving you because you're way too intense and you have a restless soul. That qualifies to me as a really not nice thing to say to somebody.
Yes.
So the fact that that person, you know, heard that and felt bad about it, you know, we don't have to take it on. We don't have to believe that it's it says or means anything about us. But that's not the same as the person wasn't directing it toward us.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's a really important piece of that to see clearly. Somebody can very definitely be trying to ruin your day. It's probably not personal.
Uh-huh.
That's the difference.
Yeah.
And it's certainly not a requirement to take it on.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, you want to go ahead or?
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
At that point, I will start identifying with conditioning telling me, quote, if you are on the road to enlightenment, you should not be affected by this.
Oh.
Quote.
Oh. Yes, tell it to shut up. Any of us on the road to enlightenment get to have whatever experience we're having,
mm-hmm.
and we practice accepting it. That's what happens on the road to enlightenment.
Yeah.
And
instead of staying away, as in intimate relationships particularly, I continue in them even though the behavior continues. I bring this up to the person initiating the behavior, and they state that they have no plans to change. I find at this point I am, quote, sorry, unquote, to the person for bringing it up. Would you be so kind to comment?
Well, now, I'm not sure I followed that, so help me out here.
Okay.
So if somebody, you know, we're at a party, and every time I start to say something, this person that I'm involved with turns around and says, just shut up.
Right.
And then I say, you know, when we're alone, you know, it that's troubling to me, and I have a hard time with that, and it's hard for me to feel loved and appreciated when you tell me to shut up in public, and the person says, well, I don't care. I have no interest in being any other way, and that's exactly what I'm going to say. You know, at that point, you might say, you know what? I think we are not, in fact, a match made in heaven. And you go somewhere and you do something else. Now, if it's a case where the person is simply being some way, so you know, I like to have all of my clothes out on the floor where I can find them easily. And I happen to live with somebody who likes the clothes in the closet. Right? Now, that's going to be a point of negotiation. But it's not a personal style kind of thing. It's not a, I'm not putting my clothes on the floor in any, you know, it has nothing to do with the other person.
Yes.
You know, so I think that it's really important to try to get a sense of what this feels like. Is this just something that I'm reacting to, and it's because of my conditioning, and it's not a bad or harmful thing? You know, I don't like it, but it's because I have ideas about how things should be that maybe it would actually serve me to work through. Or is it really something that the other person is doing with an intention of being hateful or hurtful or harmful?
Yes.
There's still, you could still stay there and realize, you know, it doesn't have anything to do with me. So if somebody needs to act like that, well, you know, they're doing whatever it is that they're doing. And so there are no shoulds. There's not a situation where you should stay or you should go. There's no on the path to enlightenment, you should be a particular way. No. You are where you are, you're seeing what you're seeing, and doing with it whatever. The bottom line for all of us all the time is, don't take your guidance from ego.
Mm-hmm.
Don't turn to conditioned mind and say, okay, what is the spiritual way to behave here? So, you know, I look inside and I say, okay, you know, we have different styles about how we keep the house. I don't want to live with somebody whose style is like that. That's it. That's a good enough reason not to live together.
Yes.
Now, am I going to suffer over that issue? Probably. And at some point, I may decide, in fact, holding on to that way of being is taking a greater toll than I want to pay.
Right.
Yeah. And so I may decide, you know, I think I want to work on letting go of this. But there are no shoulds involved in any of it.
Yes.
Do you think this speaks to what the person was writing about?
I do. I do indeed. I think you captured the essence of it exactly. Okay. And the last line, thank you from a thankful listener.
All right. Well, you know, with people like this, everybody who's written in, I do wish they would call in and say, okay, well, that's great, but, you know, there's this little piece of it, or what I really meant was, or what's going on is, you know, because sometimes it is hard to really know what the person is referring to.
Yes.
So out of that, I would just wish the person would take, there are no shoulds. There is no right answer. All we're doing is looking at, is what I'm doing leading towards suffering or away from suffering? That's all. And looking to see, do I want to continue towards suffering, or would I like to see if I can get this turned around and start heading away from suffering?
Great.
And there are no shoulds about that.
Great.
Yeah. If a person says, you know, I think I'm just not ready to let go of this. I don't think I've suffered enough. That's fine. No shoulds about that either.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
What a great show.
Well, thank you, sir. I enjoyed it myself.
I enjoyed it a lot.
I'll go out of the country again soon so we can do this again.
Okay, great.
In the meantime, talk to you very, very soon.
Talk to you very soon. Thank you, Sherry.
Good night.
Good night.